You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. In 1996, 18-year-old Angie Dodge was raped and murdered in her apartment in Idaho Falls. A man, Chris Tapp, was arrested, and he was jailed for 20 years in connection with her death before he was released. DNA was left at the scene, but it did not match Tapp's DNA. Police have been using that evidence left behind to try and find a DNA match in the case. This eventually led them to another suspect, Brian Lee Drip Sr. of Caldwell. Using a cigarette butt to get a DNA sample from Drips, police finally got a match and supposedly a confession that he raped and he killed Dodge. He has been taken from Canyon County to Idaho Falls by police. All of this has just happened within the last 2 weeks. Cynthia Sewell of the Idaho Statesman reported on this story last week. Greg Kampikian from the Idaho Innocence Project worked on the DNA aspects of the case. They both joined me live in studio. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So let's go back to 1996, in June of 96, when 18-year-old Angie was killed. And Cynthia, you've been reporting on this, so maybe just quickly kind of set the scene of what happened.
Well, Angie Dodge, 18 years old, had just moved into an apartment, was living on her own. And one morning she didn't show up for work. So coworkers went to check on her and they found her in her apartment. Police later, she had been raped. Her throat had been cut. And they determined it happened shortly after midnight. And so police started doing their regular investigatory work, doing field interviews, canvassing neighbors. They were very fortunate that they were able to collect semen samples from the scene. And so they started doing their search, and they tested all these men from the local men who either knew Dodge or lived in the area. None of the samples came up. They did focus on one person, Chris Tapp, whose DNA didn't match. And that's a whole story that the Idaho Innocence Project owns. And Tapp eventually did go to prison on related charges. And then it kind of fell off for about 10 years, although they were continually working on trying to get Tapp freed. But they had the DNA. They knew the identity of the killer. They've known that since the very beginning.
Because they have the DNA.
Right. They knew the identity, but they just didn't know the name of the person to who it belonged. And so that's where this fascinating tale unfolds over the decades of all these misconnections. And one of them, 2014, they found what they thought was a viable suspect. They got the DNA. And they ran that person through and decided it wasn't it. And I think I'm going to pass it over to Greg because he really understands what happened with this first missed connection.
Right. Yeah. And I have to say that in full disclosure, I was a news reporter in Idaho Falls when Angie was killed. And I have to tell you, when you were a young single woman, when this happened, living on your own, it was a scary time. And then to be covering it and to not know. So, Greg, when they do make this arrest of Chris Tapps, there is a relief in the community.
Oh, sure.
But the DNA does not match.
Yeah, I think we're all guilty of presumption of guilt of people when they're arrested. When they, you know, there's a string of crimes or a serious crime and they say, they got the guy. That's what everybody says. And, of course, my experience has been that we really shouldn't do that. It's natural. So I think people did feel some relief when Chris was arrested. I wasn't here. We got Chris's case in 2007, shortly after we got the Idaho Innocence Project organized at Boise State University. It was one of our first two cases. And, in fact, we started with Sarah Pierce. One of my student investigators was working on that, talked to Sarah Thomas, who was at the appellate defender's office. She said, you got to look at this Chris Tapp case. So then Chris wrote us and said, I heard you talk to Sarah. Please look at my case. And Ginny Hatch, who was the student investigator, I said, somebody's got to watch these 30 plus hours interrogation.
Because they interrogated him for like 17 plus hours.
Oh, my God. It's the most awful thing I've ever seen. They have a polygrapher who is telling him he's going to go to the gas chamber. You know, polygraphy, when you're wired up for a polygraph, they're supposed to establish a rapport with you, keep you calm. That's part of what they do. This was a, telling him he's going to go to the gas chamber, telling him the machine says he's lying, all of this stuff that any qualified polygrapher, I think, would say is bad practice. Charles Hantz, a polygrapher at Boise State University, said it was the psychological equivalent of a rubber hose. But anyway, we got the case 2007, so immediately I started looking for DNA ways back into the case. First thing we had to do, change the testing law in Idaho, because the testing law, DNA testing to prove innocence, said you had 1 year from the time you're convicted to find this evidence and get it into court. And of course, the first year of an innocent person's life in prison is, you know, how am I not going to kill myself?
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to find evidence. So thankfully, that was passed. It was changed to any time DNA or fingerprint evidence. And that was Rick Visser, who worked for us, who's a councilman now. He was our attorney at the time at the Idaho Innocence Project. Jared Hoskins took over the case. And the whole time I was trying to get the Idaho Falls police to keep testing more DNA. They had mm-hmm. semen. It didn't match TAP. It didn't match the 100 people that they tested.
And we should note, I mean, to the point that Angie's mother came mm-hmm. on board as an advocate
yeah.
for Chris TAP, saying that this is not the person.
That was a very strange day. I was in my office. It was 2007 or 2008, just started the case, and there was some publicity that we were working with Chris. And there was a call, a message, and I started just dialing the number back, and then I looked the name, and it was Carol Dodge. And I thought, who's Carol Dodge? And then I was like, oh, my God, I bet this is the victim's mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was about to hang up, and then I thought, oh, she's going to hear a hanging up from Boise State.
And that's worse. Yeah. So, yeah.
And I spoke with Carol, and, you know, the first part, of course, is just about how sorry I am and how horrible the crime is. And then I explained, I'm working for Chris Tapp. I can't really talk to you about the case, but I can explain DNA if you want. And I recall her words as, I just want to know who killed my daughter. So we started working together. That got more attention from the press, and then Dateline became involved,
right,
and then
right.
other advocacy groups kind of joined. But the whole time we're looking at DNA, we got the police to agree that they should test a pubic hair that was left on the body. And they agreed with us and tested it, and they were very nice about that. So we've worked with the police throughout this. I think they always thought Chris was involved.
Mm-hmm.
I was very sure he wasn't. But the whole point was, whose DNA is this? So then in 2011, I had a student come from Princeton. He was from Boise High, but he was at Princeton. He's like, I want to do a project in the lab. I was like, well, here's a question. What's the last name of this DNA profile? And you can do that through the Y chromosome if it's passed on male to male.
Okay.
And and this child is given the proper birth last name. So we did some tests and found out through public databases we could get last names from the very bad DNA mixture that we had. And I sent it to the police and said, look, I don't think these are the actual names, but if you will send this off for better testing, genealogical testing, you'll get a last name. Mm. And it will likely be a good lead for you.
So take us up to, yeah. so finally Chris Tapp, he takes a plea agreement. And he, correct, basically
no,
to get out of prison?
No, he never pled. And I think this is a
he
mistake.
Had to agree to something.
Oh, what happened is at trial, you know, he had confessed because they gave him a full.
Well, after 17 hours.
Well, yeah, but they gave him a deal. Like, he was not going to do prison time. He just had to implicate one of his friends, who they really thought did it. Ben Hobbs, I think, was their suspect. And when they tested the DNA, it didn't match. So they rescinded their deal with him and said, oh, well, now we're going to charge you with rape and murder. And he said, well, I'm taking back my confession. And they said, it's too late. And they fought over that. But Chris has always maintained his innocence through trial,
Absolutely.
Yeah, post-conviction.
So he finally gets released, yet
yeah,
there is still something.
He was guilty.
But there is still something on his record.
Yeah, it's called murder.
Yes, on his record.
Makes it a little bit hard to get a job or a house.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So then 2014, as Cynthia talked about, what happens in 2014, who they think this other suspect might be.
So let me just set it up that
okay.
we worked with the Idaho Falls Police Department to instruct them how to do genealogical searching, where to get it tested. Then they took it over, and they were very aggressive. I mean, for a small police unit to use cutting-edge science, this was the first time mm-hmm. anybody in America had done it this way. One other group had tried something but didn't get anywhere. And they got somewhere. So go ahead.
Well, working with Greg, they got a result back and I think it was 34 out of 35 markers. Is that correct, Greg?
From the Y chromosome.
From the Y chromosome. And so they thought this could be this is a good lead.
Okay.
This we could be on the right family line here. So this
They did more, right? They investigated, that made sure that there was some connection to Idaho because he wasn't living in Idaho.
Right. And that's what they found out, that this man who's living in New Orleans, his last name is USRY. And he, about the time of the Dodge murder, he had been in Idaho. I believe his sisters were going to BYU. And he was a filmmaker. And he had made a movie about a murder. Was it called Murderabilia?
That's what I've been told. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there were some
odd things.
Yeah. So they went down and met with him in New Orleans and decided they wanted to keep pursuing this. So they went to a Louisiana judge and got a warrant to get his DNA. So they go and they test the DNA, and Greg could probably explain this
sure.
part better.
So the 34 out of 35 match was found through a subpoena for the database at Ancestry.com. So this case has ramifications throughout the genealogy community because Ancestry then takes down its public last name database.
Right.
But anyway, they got a 34 out of 35 and then asked me, well, how good is that? And I said, that's a great lead. You're one mutation away. It could be four, five.
So this could be a family member? Is this
distant.
Distant.
Yeah.
So this
it could be close, but you know, the odds are it's a distant male who is in that Y chromosome line. You know, I gave my Y to my sons.
Mm-hmm.
Should they have sons, they'll give that Y on. And it doesn't change that much. But occasionally there's a mutation, one in whatever generations, 5, 10 generations.
So is this when they talk about that where they make the family DNA?
Right.
That family tree, that DNA. This is what has been confusing to me is how do they get
it's
this?
It's a new forensic science called genetic genealogy. And it's where they combine DNA analysis with just paper research, ancestral records, historical records, and they basically ferret out, sleuth out a family line, recreate a family tree. And that's where they...
So this is what they did in in 2014 with this individual. And is
right.
this where we get the family line taking up to...
It gets interesting because what happens then is, you know, the Michael Usry is, I believe, making a film about his experience, et cetera. And I've talked to him. He's been to my lab, and I've, you know, apologized that there was anything that might have troubled him from this. I wish they just got a discarded cigarette butt like they've done for everybody else now. I think we've all learned something. But, you know, we still thought it was in the Usry line because, you know, DNA comes from somewhere. It's like a cold. You catch it from somewhere.
Right,
you get it from someone
right.
else.
It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. And so if there's a 34 out of 35, there's someone who's a 35 out of 35, and they're in that lineage. It would be remarkable if it were just some coincidence. And so we thought it was the right family line, but they sent the DNA off for extensive testing, not 35 markers, 100,000 or so markers, at Parabon. Parabon puts out a sketch. Eye color, hair color is probably accurate, but the sketches people have different feelings about. And they put out a statement saying that they are 86-point-something% confident that this person is not a relative of Usry, a direct relative of Usry.
I'm here in studio live with Cynthia Sewell of the Idaho Statesman and Greg Kampikian from the Idaho Innocence Project. We are talking about the Angie Dodge murder case and the investigation, looking like there could finally be a true suspect in this case within the last 2 weeks. Caldwell police did arrest Brian Lee Drips Sr. He is now in Idaho Falls. All right, Greg, let's go back to where we left off with this Usry family line.
Right. So they apologized to Michael Usry, and Parabon does a calculation, says he's not in the lineage. And I think they mentioned somewhere in there it's at least six degrees separation. And we're left scratching our heads in the lab. And then 48 hours does a show, How Safe Is Your DNA? And they come into my lab. I didn't know that was the angle of the show. I thought they wanted to ask about Chris. And it was all about like, oh, this is terrible. And Aaron Morris from New York says, you know, the lawyer says, oh, everybody matches DNA. 99% of people match DNA, you know, making it sound like what we did was ridiculous. Mm. And what the Idaho Falls Police, this relatively small department, you know, really aggressively with new science did. I thought it was wonderful. And I still believe we were on the right track. And then that's when Parabon and C.C. Moore really closes the loop on this, that there are two samples left of DNA. They send one to Parabon. The other one, as part of TAP's release agreement, is sent to the Idaho Innocence Project. So we are holding on to, like, the last vial of evidence.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and I saw C.C. 2 months ago, and then I saw her just a few weeks ago at a conference, and I was like, C.C., what's going on? Because we have that sample. We're ready to go
right.
for testing. And she said, oh, you know, like she said at the press conference, they had a lead. It fell apart. And so we were just waiting. And we were June was when we were scheduled to go through with our genealogy mm-hmm. test on that. But go ahead.
Well, so all of a sudden, May 10th, Caldwell police get
right.
a discarded cigarette butt.
So what happened to finish up with the Usher line is the lead fell apart. So they went, they told Idaho Falls Police, this was earlier this month, this all happened in May. So they, CC gets on a video conference with Idaho State, with Idaho Falls Police and says, this match isn't even close. So they went back and they dug out an old obituary that mentioned a woman who had a child and, but she gave the child a later husband's name.
Oh.
And so it never had, that child never had the
so it doesn't
name.
Come down into that
and
DNA
so
family line.
They tracked it out and they found it. And they tracked it back to Brian Dripps. And then
he's that child.
Yeah, it was just a paper error. He was just never given the Usery name, even though he was.
Wait, Brian Dripps was not given the.
Right. His father is an Usery, but there was a divorce and a remarriage.
Okay.
And so he was raised under his stepfather's name, which is mm-hmm. Dripps. So and it was really close. They were so close. And then
if you could see my mouth right now, I know it's radio. It's like on the floor.
If that name had been the genetic father's name, they would have solved this in 2014 because they knew it was Usery.
Wow.
And they had a guy living across the street, different spelling of Usery, but who would have had that last name. So it's really remarkable.
Yeah. And that is one of the most fascinating. There's several fascinating twists and turns in this, but that was one of the most fascinating ones was during the first, on the fifth day of the investigation, they go and interview a neighbor across the street.
And we're talking the fifth day of the investigation 1996. In 1996.
Right. 5 days after her murder. And an officer goes and interviews a man who lives across the street. And he says, because she was killed shortly after midnight. He says, yeah, I went out drinking last night. And I got home about 11:15, and then I went out again, and I got home at 3 a.m., and he told the officer, you know, I was extremely intoxicated. No, I didn't see any strange vehicles or any people. And so they just left it at that. His name was Brian Dripps. So they had that first contact with Dripps 5 days after the murder, but then it took time to get the DNA test back, and in that time, Dripps left. He had moved in, a utility record show that he had moved in across the street from Angie about 2 months before the murder, and then about 2 months after the murder, just 1 week before they got the DNA test back that showed all the semen belonged to one donor, he turns off his utilities, leaves a forwarding address in California, and we never hear from Dripps again until May 10th of this year when Idaho State Police ran the test on a cigarette butt he tossed out. And it came back with Brian Dripps' name. And that is the second contact 23 years later that his name shows up in the investigatory record. So that first time they had that conversation with him, but he apparently didn't raise any flags, even though he was male, lived across the street, said he was extremely intoxicated that night.
Wow.
It's a fascinating story, but it's a sad.
Well, and then you go back to the fact that what I have read, and I think, Cynthia, you may have reported on this, was that he paid attention to this case over the years.
That's what they said during the press conference last week in Idaho Falls, that he had watched the news shows. And he's been in Caldwell. I think the earliest they can place him in Caldwell, which is where his mother lives.
Mm-hmm.
They placed him in Caldwell probably in the late 90s,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been in Caldwell the whole time.
But following this case, knowing someone else went to prison.
Knowing the guy's name. Even.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've been in contact with Chris Tapps since,
Yeah, we were in Atlanta not long ago. He and his wife, Stacy, we went to there. Every year there's a meeting of the exonerees nationally. Mm-hmm. And I brought Chris and his wife the last two times. And we stay together. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And what was his reaction
to this? So that was one thing that was really odd is that, to my knowledge, no one on his side was briefed about this, which was, you know, I believe, and what Chris has told me, and Chris, you know, he released a statement saying this mm-hmm. is a time for the Dodge family to mourn again. And so he's not talking or saying anything about this. But the fact that, you know, nobody knew what was going to happen. I heard about that press conference the morning of, and I don't think anybody was briefed on that side. That was really just the day to explain how the Angie Dodge murder was solved. But I was sitting in the row next to Chris. We had no idea what was going to happen. We didn't. Somebody was texting me the name Drips and saying, mm-hmm. do you know who this is? And I'm like, I don't know that name. You know, there were so many people.
Right.
There was 100 people tested or so in this case, DNA tested, let alone interviewed.
So what happens next with Chris? Because there are these, this is on his record still.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are we going to see an exoneration? Do we know, Cynthia? Have you been in contact with police at all?
You know, they said they're going to wait a couple weeks before they even publicly discuss Tapps. And but one of the things that during his confession, during Drip's confession, he said he acted alone. And the police put out a statement saying they've just got to go through and independently verify his statements. Mm-hmm. So I think they're just doing the I dotting and the T crossing because Drip said he acted alone. And I think once they feel comfortable that they can publicly say, we think this confession has basis in that, then I think they will. I think they just are being cautious, but they have to acknowledge what has happened with Chris and going forward. And I don't know if the governor can get involved. I mean, if there are other ways
right.
to.
You're talking 20 years of someone's life mm-hmm. behind bars.
Right.
Yeah. He started, the investigation started when he was 19.
Right.
Yeah. So he's lost a lot.
Right. I mean, he has.
Mm-hmm. And the DNA agrees with Drip's statement. There is DNA. We pushed for testing. As I said, they had semen. We pushed for the pubic hair. Then her shirt was tested. Her teddy bear that had been moved, that supposedly Chris said in his confession, yeah, I moved it or something, and her shirt where he held her down. Well, everything's been tested with the greatest technology. The MVAC that vacuums DNA mm-hmm. like a carpet cleaner was invented in Idaho, was used in this recently. We, through money that we had, did probabilistic genotyping on it, which gets every tiny bit of DNA information right. from the data.
And nothing ever matched Chris.
Yeah.
One man.
Consistent on every piece of evidence that gave a profile.
We need to wrap this up. I want to thank both of you for coming in. Also, hopefully finally having the right person after 23 years, but also peace for Angie, peace for her family on this. So thank you both so much. My guest today, Cynthia Sewell with the Idaho Statesman. Cynthia, you will be having a new article coming out very shortly about the next steps in this process. So watch for that. And Greg Hempikian of the Idaho Innocence Project. Thank you both so much. I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters.